So with that, I'd like to start with a quick poll of you guys. Anyone here work in an institution that has shipped art in Latin America? Anyone not shipped but is expecting to do so soon? Wow, this is like almost everybody already. Anyone, take a look at this picture. Notice the strapping available on the inside of this truck, or lack of strapping. That's wood that's been screwed into the side of the truck and into the floor in order to hold the crates in place. Let's not even talk about air ride here or climatization. Anyone here traveled to Latin America as a courier? Where's everybody going? Argentina? Brazil? Chile? Colombia? Mexico? Peru? And wild card, Bolivia? Ah, we got one, yeah. Paraguay? In one word, just shout out, how would you describe your experience? So wonderful, fantastic. What else? Did it look like this picture? Oh, that's good. Do you expect that the trip was going to be complicated ahead of time? And did it get complicated? So with that, I'd like to introduce our panel. I'm John Robinette. I'm do my registrarring with the Patricia Phelps, the Cisneros Collection in New York. And our collection emphasizes acquiring and loaning out Latin American art. Jessica Nielsen on the end is an assistant registrar at MoMA, Museum of Modern Art in New York, and her most recent exhibition was Latin America in Construction, where she shipped over 600 objects from pretty much every nook and cranny in Latin America. Ruben Mendez, the superstar on the panel, is the president of...
Vice president.
Oh, sorry.
My brother comes.
Okay. We'll play fair. Of Delmiro Mendez e Hijo in Argentina, and has basically worked in every country in Latin America and also helped to realize many large-scale projects for institutions in the region that are not based in Latin America. KC Sirota works as an international exhibitions coordinator and manager at Masterpiece International in New York, and has had a strong emphasis in the last few years on shipping in Latin America, and traveled extensively in the region working to further the bonds between Latin American shippers and international shippers. So with that, I'm going to introduce Casey, and he's going to give us a context for what's going on.
So in working with Latin America, I think a lot of people have some misconceptions about how that process can go. These are some of the thoughts that we've had and that we've discussed about ways in which people think of working with Latin America. They often start with the feeling that they have a lack of resources or sophistication among museums, collections, and galleries, where there's been an enormous amount of change happening in the last few years with all of these kinds of places, from institutions like John at the Cisneros, the museum pictured here, Casa Daros, which is a Swiss collection that just opened up an incredible facility in Rio de Janeiro, Malba, which continues to do major international projects in Buenos Aires. So there's a development, and there are incredible institutions, and I think a lot of you have probably worked with some of them, and we'll hear more from them as they continue to develop. And there's the concept of impossible customs and bureaucracy. We've all heard horror stories and had difficulty working with customs in Latin America. I think part of it, what we're presenting is that with advanced planning and with appropriate timelines, nothing is really impossible. It's just, it may be more difficult than you're used to, and just if you're shipping to Europe or within the United States, it's going to be more complicated, but it's not impossible. The other thought is that agents may not have the same understanding as their U.S. museums and collections here. That can be true, but you have to work through some of those challenges. And again, I think Ruben will probably talk a bit about this, the fact that, you know, in some countries, like in Brazil and Argentina, we have high-quality agents. When you get a little further afield, when you're in Uruguay, a country that's quite small and doesn't have a lot of resources, you have to sort of work with ways in which either a local shipper, who's probably more of a mover than an art shipper, can do some things to make your life easier, such as, you know, having crates built in another country, shipped in. There are lots of things in which people can do to make that process easier. And so that leads into the last part, the trucking or packing needs that cannot be met. Again, we're finding that increasingly agents have abilities and resources and equipment that is improving on a very regular basis. So there's some of the challenges and problems that we're highlighting as well. One is miscommunication. Obviously, you've got a language issue that comes up from time to time, either with agents not having a lot of English speakers on hand, or just lost in translation kind of situations. We think that, you know, not allowing enough time to negotiate loans or export licenses. There are a lot of export requirements that have to be done before you borrow from an institution. Or if you lend to an institution and the works are coming back, you have to allow plenty of time to make sure that your export licenses are gone through and everything's done correctly. Another thing that we've seen in exhibitions is that change of ownership can cause a lot of headaches. While something's at your museum, at MoMA we've had that happen a number of times, where a piece was purchased in the middle of an exhibition, and that changes the whole way in which something has to be returned into Brazil or Argentina or wherever. That also another thing that related to that is that if you get works, I think from Argentina at least, that are unframed, they have to return to Argentina unframed. You can't frame them and return them in the same way, because that's a change of commodity. So it's something, you know, you have to be aware of that. And as long as you and your agent are aware of those things, it will make the process a lot easier. In Brazil, for instance, the exhibitions are often produced by outside producers, which are sometimes corporate entities. They're for-profit organizations that do the curatorial part of an exhibition. They also find the funding through corporate sponsors and that sort of entity. This is very counter to the way we understand in the U.S. exhibitions to be organized. So that causes a bit of confusion. And then finally, there is a major lack of funding among museums. There's a big push. There are a lot of new museums, especially in Rio, where the Olympics are coming, where the World Cup was. Everyone's fighting for cultural resource money there, so it's definitely a changing dynamic. But there's also a positive thing, and this leads into, you know, why we're here and why we want to promote the idea of working with cultural exchange in Latin America. Part of this is the new museums, and again, this is another picture of a new museum, the Museo de Arte do Rio in Rio de Janeiro. Fantastic facility that is doing amazing exhibitions and sort of popped up seemingly out of nowhere in the last couple of years. It would be a great institution to work with. In advance of the Olympics, there are many others that are opening up, and those opportunities can only be seen to grow. And that has also led to shows like Latin America in Construction at MoMA, where huge amounts of Latin American items are coming into the United States, because there's still, it's an increasing exchange. Just a quick list of exhibitions that have come up that are related to this topic. You know, you have major monographic exhibitions like Ligia Clark. You have shows like Behind Closed Doors, which was at the Brooklyn Museum here in New Orleans, the Ringling Museum and the Albuquerque Museum. It's a show that was mainly from U.S. collections, but it shows the increasing popularity of Spanish colonial art, Latin American art, Latin American construction, as I talked about. LACMA's major show, Contested Visions, shows like MFA Houston's collection exhibition, Fangs, Feathers, and Fins, where it was borrowed in the collection, but is, again, showing the interest in this topic. And then there's also commercial activity. Art fairs are growing in a huge way, particularly in Rio, Sao Paulo, and Mexico City, where enormous fairs are being held. These fairs are exceptionally popular. For those of you who are in collections, private collections, it's where you may be buying a lot of works. A number of museums are making acquisitions from these, but there's also a reason why these have grown so fast. And one is particularly that in Brazil, you get a decreased VAT rate when purchasing in Brazil. So normally the taxes are 40-50% on a purchase. It's lowered to something like 15% during the fair, and galleries are allowed to sell during selling not just from what they have on site, but through a catalog. So that's part of the reason why for Brazilian collectors these have grown. But we've also seen a lot of galleries in Latin America come to places like Frieze or Art Basel. So going through all this, we suggest that you select qualified partners. That will help the process. If you understand your preferences and their and the museum or institution you're working with, their preferences, starting that dialogue in an early way will be a major help. Familiarizing yourself with local customs through your agent locally and through your local agent in the country you're working with, and the most important thing, I think, is always developing a timeline that will help you avoid delays. Make sure that you plan for your Latin American loans or exhibitions with plenty of time so you don't run into issues like export licenses or packing considerations that you want to have duplicated by your local agent. If you have the time built in, it'll be much easier. John, do you want to talk about this image?
This is pretty much everyone's worst nightmare, right? This is a crate after it's been x-rayed. They decided to open it up, pull everything out, and stab the foam repeatedly, checking for any sort of hidden contents. Again, after it was x-rayed, so don't look. Turn away.
So here's another image. I think this is one of my favorites. We've got a Matisse that's being sniffed rather closely by a dog.
Again, after it was x-rayed.
So in the effort to increase the dialogue and encourage discussion, we really want to make this an open session, and we'd really like to have your questions. We'll talk about whatever issues you find most useful to further this discussion.
I'll get started here. So since most of everyone is from institutions, why do we even care about shipping art to Latin America? What's the motivation to actually realize these loans instead of just saying, nope, it's too risky, or it's not, the works aren't prepared, they're too valuable, we can't loan them. So why even bother?
Well, it's a cultural exchange. It's an educational opportunity to share an amazing collection, perhaps, to build a brand in other countries and to build those connections.
Do you think that, do you have something to add? Sorry.
Yes, because the artists are good too.
Yeah. So, where's what's the best place to start? Is it with your shipper or curator or
Well, I think that as an institution and as the registrar, who is the go-between, it comes down that you're going to have an exhibition, and there is hopefully a realized checklist in that process, as opposed to an evolutionary one.
That sounds like you're speaking from experience.
Yes. So Latin American construction started with 1,000 objects on the original checklist, and we were able to cut it down, thankfully. Pretty much. In that process, there was 10 countries from Latin America on the checklist. We pared it down to 7. Prior experience on my part was only an export to Brazil for a one-off venue. So in comparison and pulling in from multiple countries, that was a big difference, and I had very little experience. So I relied heavily on my broker. And so Casey got an email and said, okay, here we go. 10 months out, I need a list by country on what you think are going to be my biggest challenges and how do we handle each one. And I still referred to that to the very last day. And all were very accurate. And I was most recently asked, did I have any insight about Venezuela? And I said yes. And I was able to reference that entire list and say, okay. And every point he pointed out in that process came true.
Casey, when you made that list, did you strategically select shippers in each country based on the result that you wanted? Or, I mean, how did you go about selecting the shipper in each country?
Well, I think it was mainly that it was people that we've worked with, that we had excellent relationships with, and we'd had good results with. In some countries, you know, in like Brazil, we have, you know, 6-7 different options, and we worked with the people who had been most successful for us in the past. In fact, one of Jessica's colleagues who was handling the Brazilian loans on the import to that show said she wished that the agent in Brazil could teach some lessons to some of our European friends on communication, which was incredible. I mean, it was a really great, great experience. In other countries, like Venezuela, there is one option. So you don't really have a choice. You have to work with their shortcomings, I should say. It wasn't necessarily the best experience, but in the end it worked. It came. Mm-hmm. It wasn't the best or worst packing in that sense. But it was, you know, it was a limitation. There are also places where we might have done things differently, and I think, you know, in Uruguay, for instance, we worked with a local packer who wasn't necessarily, who advertises themselves as a finite packer, but may, you know, isn't as experienced because there's just a very small market. And, you know, in the future, we might have built that crate in another country and brought it there for packing rather than have that happen directly from the packer. So there are a number of considerations that went into choosing the agents and to providing a timeline for when we should be doing things and how we should be doing them.
Yeah. Ruben, do you have any?
Yes, we did this in many times. No, we prepared the crates in Buenos Aires and export to Uruguay, to Chile, to Ecuador, to Colombia, to Bolivia, and from there we go to pack and then reship with the paint inside or the works inside. We did it. These things in many times.
And so one of your staff actually travels to
Yes,
pack
we go to take the measure to see the paintings or whatever, and we come back to Argentina, we prepare the crates, and we export the empty crates to that to the other places, and if necessary we go again, if it's complex the packing, we go there. We put the things inside the crate, mm-hmm. and then we're working with a local agent. We export the work from there.
And
we did many times. Yes.
And from your end, how do you choose your shippers in each country? So if you're going to export to Venezuela, or not Venezuela.
I never worked
Chile
with Venezuela.
Or
Chile. Yes, we use a moving company there. Mm-hmm. That we use the truck they have. The storage they have, mm-hmm. and some people to move the crates, no, because we are two or three who goes and to lower and unload. And also in Bolivia, with the tools they have there, we work. Mm-hmm. And in Colombia, or Ecuador, different tangents.
This is an important point where...
We did for the MoMA, for the show with Torres Garcia, with Uruguay.
One of the interesting things that you just kind of hinted at is that there's a discrepancy between using an art mover and a moving company. So the natural problem that arises is using the same language and the same vocabulary to describe the result that you want. And this is something that you mentioned to us.
Yes, but even the vocabulary is different between us. Remember that we are very, very large. It's not the same to talk with a Mexican people than a Chilean people or Uruguayan people. It's different, the vocabulary. Mm-hmm. Even talking the same language.
Right.
And also it's difficult to get when we choose someone in the other place, we choose people that had connection with the art, mm-hmm. and know the directors or have some relationship with the art, some connection with the art, mm-hmm. not only a moving company.
Right.
Okay. And people that we know that has some experience.
Right.
No.
So when you collaborate with, say, a moving company in Bolivia...
But at the beginning, I will tell you something. When we started to do this, at the beginning it was difficult because we, especially me that traveled with the things, I don't know to whom talk, no? Which people...
Which agent? Yeah.
So I have to investigate... Mm. Who could help me more?
Who how did you investigate and how did that process
talking
go?
With the people.
Yeah.
Talking with the people, going to the ministry or see what kind of problem I could have with the import of the crates or when I export the crate, what kind of warranty I have to have. Mm-hmm. Many things. What kind of tool they have, mm-hmm. and sometimes I prefer to contract or subcontract, not the trucks that they need, if not the trucks that I can because the other tools are better than the truck.
Right.
No.
So it's very much a collaboration, is what you're saying.
Yes.
So there's been some allusion to the idea that it sounds like, you know, like in MoMA's case, and maybe you've sort of seen this with the institutions you work with, Casey, where you're actually you're making the arrangements yourself for countries in Latin America instead of, say, just hiring the agent to take care of things on their end. You're actually sort of dictating how the things are packed, et cetera, even if it's not necessarily your work. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, we've seen a couple scenarios. I mean, similar to what Ruben has said in terms of working with Uruguay or Paraguay or Bolivia, where he has built crates and sent them and then worked with the local agent. We've also done projects throughout the Caribbean or throughout some places in Central America where we've had U.S. packers build the crates, we've exported the crates to the country, we've even sent teams of art handlers to the local institution or private home or wherever it is to do the packing and then arranged with a local company to do the actual air freight or, you know, or ocean, depending on what the access is, back into the U.S. So we've done, you know, we've worked with Ruben, we've worked directly with some of the moving companies, where it all also depends on their budget. I mean, it's really expensive to build crates, obviously, in the U.S., export them, have them packed by an American team, and then brought back in. I mean, that requires a major budget. If your budget doesn't allow that, and often on something that's an acquisition or a small project, that's not going to be possible. And you do end up working with the local packer in Uruguay or wherever, and you send them your specs and what you would like, and there's often like a lot of discussion, and what you get will probably not look exactly what you want, but is is going to be closer than if you just let them try to build an art crate without any further input.
I'm just going to say this because it's contrary to what most of us think, but maybe there's a different perspective in Latin America. Are North Americans and Europeans just overprotective about their work? I mean, we have so much technology, and we're constantly doing research into better materials, better packing methods, etc. But I'll give you an example. We have a work in our collection that's worth several million dollars, and it was painted in the 17th century in the jungles of northern Brazil on a river. It was sent back to Europe, survived the French Revolution, whereas like most of the body of work that was created at that time did not. Traded hands many times, was sold at an auction to us, and now is in our collection, and we look after it like, you know, it's a newborn baby. And you know, it's been through a lot more than most of us really care to know. So I mean, it can apparently sustain a lot. I mean, are we just worrying too much about our works?
As a nervous registrar, I certainly don't want anything to happen to it on my watch. So, I perhaps am too nervous, but I certainly don't want that onus of having something happen. And I think as someone who works in cultural institutions where the purpose is to preserve and protect for future generations, that is a mindset that you will always be nervous.
Right.
But with that said, you need to be malleable enough to say, okay, you don't do it the way I'd like it to be done, but it will still get done.
Yeah.
And some measures will be taken. It won't be exact, and we had that discussion yesterday about providing crate specs to lenders that may not have the same materials. What you expect in the form of ethafoam is going to show up in blue styrofoam. That difference could happen even within the U.S. I ask a crater in California versus in New York, the materials will be different, perhaps. The design, I give a design layout, it still will be different. So there's variations on themes all the time. It's just managing those, and it's managing expectations.
Yeah, for sure. Any thoughts on that? I mean, do you think that
the material is different?
Do you think that the Americans or the Europeans just want too much? Like,
yeah, sometimes I think that's too much. Why?
Yeah.
Well, but if they pay.
Yeah.
But it's difficult for us to get all the materials that in the United States or in Europe are. In Argentina now we have very big issues with the material because the importation is closed. Mm-hmm. It's just closed. So it's difficult for us until get a foam board, glassing paper, or another kind of material is difficult.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to the importers cannot import.
I know that sometimes we just have sort of specify the goal. Like, for example, you know, maybe I don't want anything touching the surface of the painting, and if I specify the goal, the solutions will actually be very smart and ingenious and not something that you typically see in creating, and your goal is achieved, maybe not the means that you typically would expect from a European or American creator. Go ahead.
I think slightly further to that, I mean, also on our Latin American in construction project, one of the issues that we ran into is that there's a lack of actual paper and wrapping material in Venezuela, and we actually worked with MoMA. MoMA FedExed the wrapping material to Venezuela because they could build the outer crate, they could line it, they could add foam cushioning, but they didn't actually have the wrapping material, and the lender was really concerned that was going to be an issue. And we just talked about, I just found out that same, the courier that traveled from this university collection in Caracas with the works to MoMA, then went to the conservation store.
Right, that was the first question. Where can I find Talus in New York to buy more materials? So it was like, oh, okay, I understand. You have nothing.
Imagine the exchange rate between Venezuela and New York going to spend that extra money on packing materials.
Because they had no accessibility to it all. And for Venezuela, we borrowed from universities that actually had some standards as to what they wanted their works to be wrapped in. Had we borrowed from private collectors, that might have not been the case, and we would have wound up with whatever in that crate. So there.
But in this case, I would send ship the crate already.
But then that's a cost, and that becomes back to an institution on budget.
Okay.
And so it's a choice, and you know, you have to weigh your odds, and every time you ship, it's always different. It's the same, but different.
Speaking of different, can we talk about insurance values? let's actually have a question here.
Oh, it should be right.
It is? Oh, good. My name is Rosa Lowinger. I work in Latin America all the time. I'm a conservator, and there's an organization, the International Network for the Conservation of Contemporary Art. We had a meeting, Adi Noteem, a few years ago, where what we did is we developed a common glossary in Portuguese, Spanish, and English with photographs to talk about conditions that we were seeing, and we're in the process of developing that, and it might be useful also from a material standpoint. Because what in one country is called one thing, it's not going to be called the same all over Latin America.
That's true even in Spanish or whatever language. It's different
even
in Mexico.
Even within Spanish. I mean,
that's what I'm saying. In Mexico, it's called something different than it is in Spain versus in Argentina. So.
And in Cuba, it's called something completely different.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, apropos of this issue of bringing materials, you know, there's been a huge amount of movement of artwork from Cuba to the United States in recent years as collectors go. And all of the materials are carried in by hand. But that's obviously going to change in the near future. But I think if we have like this sort of idea of a glossary that of what the materials mean, it'll make it easier for people there who are just packing whatever it is.
Is this glossary available online?
The Inca glossary isn't completed yet, but it will be, obviously.
Okay, that's great. How will we be able to find out about it?
I'll let you know.
Okay, great.
I'll let somebody know.
Yeah, please. No, yeah, let ARCS know, because then they can publish it on their website, hopefully, right? Thank you. Yeah.
Hi there. I'm from PACART, but I'm also quite active in the organization ISAFAT. I need your business card, because within the next 6 months, ISAFAT will be introducing what we call the Material Information Translation Site. And we're building this for a year and a half now. It's up on the web a little bit, but it'll be complete and rolled out for ERC this year. And it'll be in 6 languages, including Turkish. You'll be able to put in the term that you know, see a picture, click another flag, and it'll do it in Spanish, it'll do it in German, we're doing it in Turkish. So 6 ones coming up. And we're excited about joining in with PACIN, because I've been involved with PACIN over the years, and they've always wanted to do this project too. So if there are anybody else that wants to join in and help us put this information together, we welcome that suggestion. Thank you.
Can I ask you a quick question?
Oh, sure.
How do you standardize, like we were just mentioning, the terminology even between countries, even if it's, say, the same language like Spanish?
What will happen is all the members and anybody else that wants to contribute to this, we call it MITS project, will be welcome to send things in. So we might get somebody from Spain and said, this is our term in Spain. And we might get someone like Ruben from Argentina say, we call it here. There'll be a picture of the description of what it is, the material you want.
Yeah.
Another exciting project we're working on is, and I think we alluded to this in the packing part of things, you know, you're going to get different types of crates in that. We're working on another really exciting initiative, which is minimum standards for packing. So we don't want to tell people, your crate has to look like this, but we want to tell people, this is the type of material you need to use. This is the minimum you're not using. You know, 1/8-inch laminate, we need you to use 1/2-inch or 3/4, that sort of stuff. And that'll unfold over the course of the next year. So you check the website out. It's brand new. Looking good. Thank you.
Thanks. Thoughts?
Your question is?
So something that's come up many times is on insurance values when it comes to importing and then re-exporting works and how it changes. It's sort of a nebulous thing, and it's really important from many institutions' point of view that it actually matches, and if it doesn't, it raises a lot of yellow flags. And I know that Jessica has lots of opinions on this.
Well, when you have, you know, the issue stems per country and what a lender, mostly private, is concerned about what value they put down and what they're going to have to pay a tax on later on, not necessarily for your export, for a temporary exhibition, but more about, oh, the government is going to know what I have. So your values vary, and it could be a $10 value, but that they want to ship it on, but in the loan agreement and the insurance value they put down, it is $1 million. So that is a large discrepancy that can't happen for us as an importer. So it usually turns into a lender truly deciding, do they want to lend? And more often than not, they will decline because they don't want to share that value. So it's a problem. It's a problem for an institution who has built a checklist based upon 100 objects, and now they have whittled it down to 30 that now they have to find filler for. And it changes the type of exhibition you're able to put on, and it changes your budget, and it, you know, changes relationships as well.
Sydney, let me come to your question 1 second. I want Ruben to explain why a lender would not want to lend because of the insurance value.
Yes, it is because of a tax problem. I don't know in the room how many countries are, but this country, which country of the people in the room has export duties? Which country in the room has import duties? Okay. Renata, how much are your import duties in total?
Well, I work in Brazil, so we have for fine arts, for sculptures and paintings, it is about 45-50% of CIF value. And for photography, it is about 17%.
Okay, thank you, Renata.
Oh, and just to add to that, if you all know, in the U.S., we don't really have to pay, institutions do not have to pay import duties, but we do have to tell the actual value of the work. We have to be transparent. So that's you have to think about that different communication. That's part of it, is that we understand what we have to do here in the U.S., but there are so many other issues that are impacting their decisions monetarily when they're exporting their work and importing it into the U.S. here. So.
Yes, but when you ask to a private collector, they are not an institution. They have to take... They can take problem with the tax house. That's the difference.
But, Sydney, what's your question?
Maybe it even touches upon this a little bit. I was going to ask Jessica, well, I had two questions, but I'll just stick with one.
I work with you, Sydney.
Well, I was going to ask for Jessica and maybe Casey to speak a little bit more about the communication, the issue of communication. We're not really speaking very honestly about language, and I think I have worked on acquisitions that have come in, and I know, and I do speak Spanish, and I have started my communications in English and realized that if I just start writing in Spanish, like, there is a lot more ease to the communication. There's actually more information that comes through to me, and I can express what I need more clearly, and they can tell me what they can do and cannot do. And so language is a huge aspect here, and it does help even in Europe as well. So we have to think about that. A lot of times we take advantage of knowing French or German, and we use that to facilitate our activity. But in Latin America, I think people don't realize that, you know, if you just make the overture, that's very helpful. But even if you don't have that, it's just... I wanted Jessica to speak a little bit about the amount of work that she put in terms of communication, because she was definitely in the office very late, many evenings, and I think it's because there's a lot of discussion that has to go on back and forth, and I think if people are going to be shipping to Latin America, that they just need to know that, that they need the time to really develop a rapport with the people that they are working with, and I'm sure KC can speak to that too.
Well, it's true. Communication is key, and if there's a language barrier, that is never helpful. But I am not fluent in Spanish. I can read it, and I'm very fluent in international pantomime, so not being able to see anybody. I utilized a number of staff members who are fluent in Spanish to write letters for me, and I would dictate and say, this is what I need to know, please ask this. They would write those letters for me, and it definitely helped our communication, and especially when we would come up against a problem and we would need to talk to multiple brokers within the same office. And Ruben actually mentioned earlier, and it's not just language issue, it's about the philosophy of the company that you're working with and the type of moving that they do, which we've touched upon. That is a huge difference as well, where it was eye-opening to me that if somebody is identifying themselves as a fine art packer, that really means they're going to move your Monet from house to house. They're a mover. They're not a fine art packer. And that difference in language and what I expect and what they think I expect are very different. So that was the largest challenge, not necessarily in language difference, but in communication of understanding that nuance of what fine art packing really is.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think what, Sydney, your point is well taken. I think, you know, I have some amount of language experience in a variety of different languages, and I use that where I can. And that doesn't mean, I mean, I don't speak Portuguese. You know, that's going to be an issue no matter what. One of the things that I've found is that working with some varied agents in Brazil, you'll sometimes have only one person who's really the contact who speaks English, and then they are disseminating the information. And there's a lot of nuance that's lost in that process, because if one person is doing all of the translation for you know 10 people, then you know how much of that your detailed list of questions or you know thoughts being translated. You know, it's being boiled down to a minimum and then sent over. And you might lose a lot when that happens. So, I mean, I think you're right. I think the more you can do in the local language, you're going to have a better experience. But there are also a lot of ways in which we work around that. We have a lot of, I mean, in our office, we have a lot of people who are fluent in a lot of different languages. We utilize that. I think one of the things that we did with this project, which is exceptionally helpful, is that the curatorial assistant, where we were having issues with lenders not signing documents that were needed or that sort of thing, is that the curatorial assistant would then step in. And right. what I relied on was that my agent telling me where the issues were and where we were having roadblocks, and then once we identified that issue, bringing that up to Jessica and getting the curatorial assistant to then further communicate what actually needed to happen so that there wasn't miscommunication. And so that was done in the local language. I think we would do that in any sort of circumstance where you have a country where you're not speaking the local language.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Abarno from the American Federation of Arts, and I kind of wanted to circle back to the idea of a timeline. I know Jessica was saying, you know, we start out with these giant checklists, and as registrars, you know, we're not always in control of when the checklist is finalized. Ideally, in terms of export permits and whatnot, when would we want to have a final checklist in hand to be able to do what we need to do to make this as smooth as possible?
You wanna?
Sure. So, I mean, this project was great because we had so many different countries involved and so many different particular issues, and because it was architectural objects and not artwork, they were also more complicated to pack. So it was a really great learning experience. I think what I did for Jessica was I created a timeline for each country, because certain countries were going to be very easy to work with, and others were going to be a lot more complicated. One of the things that we knew about Brazil is that if you're borrowing from private individuals, they often had to be made into, they had to get a, they'd be registered as an exporter. Like that process took, you know, 6 weeks to 2 months. And that was in the actual export process, and the export license could not be started until we actually had them registered as a exporter. So that's 2 months. Then you want to allow enough time to get your export licenses in order, and then you have time to pack. So that might be another month to 2 months. So ideally, with Brazil, you would say 4 months, maybe, which is a long time for a lot of exhibitions.
Right.
Then again, Uruguay, it had complicated issues because we didn't have a great packer locally, but the actual customs portion of that was exceptionally easy. So we could have started
with that.
Yeah. And we have some help. So that you know would be a month maybe in advance that we would be able to make that happen. So it really varies a lot.
What about another popular country, Mexico? That's a big country. So like how long?
So Mexico is, I mean, Mexico, a lot of things happen fairly last minute, but they can get, they're incredibly quick when it comes down to getting the customs actually processed. Again, I think to allow for the kind of packing that you want to see and to negotiate all of the issues that may come up between borrowing from institutions and private collectors, and if you're trying to combine a bunch of those things, you want to allow a little extra time for that. But if you give a couple months, in Mexico is no problem.
And just one more point on the timeline, I'm sorry. Just in using that as a guideline, you also have to vet that up against your own institution's timeline and where you are as far as how far out you're willing to ensure works. And we were able to push our normal is a month out from exhibition open, and we were able to push this out an additional month, and that was very helpful. If I hadn't had that additional month to allow shippers to go in and collect things, it probably would not have happened as well as it did. So allowing yourself as much time as possible, especially not just in letting the shippers know, but also within your institution and, you know, when you're given a green light, the sooner that happens, the better.
Hi, my name is Bianca Cabrera. I'm a registrar with Gallery Le Long in New York City. We work with some great contemporary Latin American artists. We work with lots of institutions in Latin America, so I can kind of speak to both sides of the fence. I work a lot with Brazil, and I was hoping that I have two questions. One is I always think I know that think I'm doing the right thing, and then I'm proven wrong when it comes to Brazilian customs. So I was hoping you could maybe give two or three points or words of wisdom about generally shipping in and out of Brazil. And the second question is, why do Brazilian collectors always insist on certificates of authenticity? Is that a tax thing? Is that a... Nobody knows?
Okay. I don't know. Maybe Renata will be able to answer that. I think in terms of working with Brazil, I mean, it is a difficult country in terms of bureaucracy, but it's not impossible. That's sort of what I continue to tell people, and you have a lot of different options there in terms of agents there, and there are a lot of there's a lot of different experiences depending on who you work with. So choosing your local agent is an incredibly helpful thing, and knowing who your partner is there will improve the situation greatly. Because of the sort of bureaucracy, again, this issue with registering as your private person as an exporter or registering as an importer, that process can take a very long time, and some people are very hesitant to do that. One of the biggest problems I've come up with is a collection of, you know, it wasn't very valuable, but a collection of books that someone wanted to bring from Brazil to the U.S., but the person or the estate that owned these objects didn't want to register as an exporter.
Is that for tax reasons? They don't want to declare the value of their work?
Yes.
Exactly. I mean, then they would have to pay a certain amount of taxes or whatever, or you have to pay even to be a registered exporter. You know, there are certain financial implications of all those sorts of things. So negotiating that, I mean, again, as long as you have enough time, getting through that process is really, it's always possible. It's just a matter of how long you have. And I know in working from a gallery, you probably don't have huge, long, lengthy timelines either, which that complicates things, certainly. But
if you choose the correct agent, the connected agent, and there are many recognized agents, you will have no problem. If you want, well, I don't know which kind of problem you have, but if you follow the rules, talk me later.
Hi, I'm Racine Burkow from Racine Burkow Associates in New York, and we've been shipping to Latin America to and from for decades. And I agree with you that it's 3 to 4 months for an exhibition, but you know, some of the things that you talked about, you know, with the packing and crating, did you ever try to Skype some of the people that you're working with and you have conversations with them, like in Spanish, and sort of show them what you want? Because that can really facilitate things very, very much, in addition to some of the correspondence.
Have you had good success with that?
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, I mean, when you're talking to the actual lenders, mm-hmm. you know, and also to some of the packers, and, you know, you do diagrams, and, you know, as they're doing the crate, they kind of show you what they're doing, and you say yes, no, you know, do this, do that, you know, and it's been quite successful.
And you've done that with museums, galleries,
yes,
private lenders?
Yes, the last time we did this, it was for a complicated project that was glass, and this was a private situation. But you know, it was really very difficult to handle, and you know, it worked really, really well. But it's just another technological tool that you know could be used, and this way it's more collaborative.
No, good suggestion. Thank you.
Yeah, and the other thing is, you know, when shipping really large objects from Latin America, it's quite complicated. I mean, especially directly into New York. So that's something that you have to, you know, really kind of consider.
The problem is we have not a big aircraft to New York.
Yes.
You have to go to Miami.
It's
not a problem of the agent, it's not neither the art. It's about the capacity that we have.
Right, so that's, you know, and then how are you going to transport it, you know, usually by truck, you know, up the East Coast. Anyway, I'm just putting my 2 cents in.
Okay. Thank you.
I would say just one quickly on that point in terms of, I think that's a good point in terms of the technology. I've gone and visited a number of agents personally and sort of talked with them about the way they pack or the way we pack, and talked about some of those differences, and done that in person as well. I mean, I found the face to face is much easier than just through email. So I very much agree, and I think Skype is a great idea to continue that process.
Hi, I am Brandy Pomfret from Museum of Modern Art in New York. This might be a little bit more for John than Jessica, because I wanted you guys to talk maybe about the difference in bringing works in from Latin America if you're acquiring them. I know you have private collections, so you're buying works, although the museums do acquire from Latin America also. But just the kind of difficulties and things and how different it is, and you're facing that versus the temporary coming in for an exhibition, and then they know that it's going back to their country afterwards.
Casey will be able to talk about, you know, importing on a permanent basis versus a temporary basis. But the biggest issue that we have is the packing issue, because a lot of times, you know, we'll buy directly from the artists and they're going to pack it themselves, which is its own special catastrophe. sometimes can be. Or, you know, it'll be packed well and, you know, It's customs that will mess it up, and customs is sort of the elephant in the room that we really barely talked about today. But yes, it takes a long time. Yes, you have to be patient. the biggest issue is you know the packing, and a lot of times we'll buy from galleries that are run by someone that's just as young as the artist, and that's its own problem because they don't know the right agents to use, and you know we're relying on someone's knowledge, but in the middle of Ecuador you don't really have very many options, so you're just you know there's a lot of praying. And then there's also, you know, the reliance on your agent, which is also key. And, you know, again, just sort of like communicating with everybody and making sure that, you know, they're doing things according to your specifications. And again, you know, it's hard to dictate, you know, that you should be using 2-inch foam to line the inside of your crate. And, you know, Ruben told us a story about how, you know, someone from the United States bought a work, sent their specifications, and then they call Ruben and say, can you sell me some foam? And so he's like shipping foam to Chile or whatever. So it's best to just sort of be as forthcoming as possible in terms of, you know, your specifications and your desires as to how you get the results. So
I just was wondering if you guys could say something quickly about courier trips to Latin America, because I know, sorry, I didn't introduce myself. I'm Sky from Cisneros Collection, and work with John, I'm the collections manager, and we do a lot of shipping to museums in Latin America and always go on the courier trips. And I know I've been on trips before and felt like there's absolutely no reason for me to be there because I'm sitting in the terminal at the airport because I don't have access to the cargo area in the airport. So, and there have been other instances when I was so happy I was there because I was able to explain how I want the palette to be strapped together, for example. But if you guys could just say something about what expectations should be for couriers when they're going on those kinds of trips to, say, Brazil or anywhere else in Latin America.
Well, go ahead. Okay. I work with Sky, so she knows my opinion.
I think again, the expectations vary greatly depending on where you are, and also the access varies greatly. I mean, in Mexico City, we have great agents, but they have limited access to the tarmac because it's the federal government controls the airport in Mexico City, and so we have to rely on sort of a different set of expectations there from what we're used to in the U.S. In Brazil, our agents usually have more access to the tarmac, but we can't get you, the courier, into the cargo warehouse always. Sometimes they can, sometimes they can't, and that's really up to the local, you know, administration, either in Sao Paulo or Rio or Viracopos, where the freighter enters. So again, it even depends on which airport you are. I think, again, what the most important thing, though, is to rely on your agent and the local agent to discuss that and to really communicate about that and have that conversation so that no one is confused or upset when something happens that you're not expecting. So even if the expectation in each country is different, as long as you've talked about it and you know what you're expecting, I think you're going to be way more comfortable than someone arriving expecting to have service like they have at, you know, JFK or at the airport in Miami or wherever you're used to as your normal service. If that's what you're going into expecting, you're probably not going to get it. So knowing what that is important.
One other thing, if depending on where you're from, make sure you check the country that you're going and see if you need a visa. So, for example, from the United States, we need a business visa in order to do work in Brazil. So that's also something you should definitely check and make sure you have beforehand. We gotta wrap it up here, so one last question.
Good morning. Ellen Conti from MoMA. Nice to meet you, Ruben. I have a question about the timeline. If you're bringing things early in for framing and you have a tour, I'm thinking about Torres Garcia, is 2 years the maximum? There's nothing that can be done but to, you know, bring it back to Buenos Aires and then re-export it if you have like a long tour where the last venue is going to exceed the 2-year limit?
I think Ellen's question is mainly in regards to there being a limitation if you have a temporary loan for how long.
Yeah, well, the rule says that we have 1 year.
Right, and then you can
And we can apply for another year. But we can apply for an extra year. We
right.
have a maximum 1 year, and we can apply for a second year. But if we our first request was for 6 months. The second request is for 6 months, not for 1 year.
Oh. Okay.
So that's why we need all the information. And if we know that the exhibition will be for more than 1 year, we cannot ask for more than 1 year. We have to get the first request for 1 year. If there are a third venue, will be another request.
Okay. So you can make another request.
Yes, but okay. Never more than 2 years.
Okay. Thank you, Ruben.
So in closing, I do want to mention that in order to sort of further the discussion on this topic, I started a Google group called Registrarte. So it's something that you can ask me about personally, and it's basically it's just a listserv format. So much like the RCAAM listserv, you can ask questions, and the goal is to get people from Latin America talking directly to people in North America and Europe and the rest of the world about shipping questions and problems that they might be having. Also, I just want to lastly mention a few takeaways from the whole thing. So remember to go in with a lot of patience, and it's not impossible. Just change your expectations slightly, and don't expect it to be like Europe or North America. Set your timelines early, and set your goals early, and work on your checklist so you go in with enough time to get your permits and everything. And then if you have any further questions, please see us all after, and we'll be around. So thank you so much.